Ron Heron for AM 1290.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel and Diane Duva and I are your hosts every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11 and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people in Santa Barbara at Figueroa and Anacapa Streets and in Montecito's Upper Village. And Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
Neil, happy Monday. How are you doing today?
I'm doing much better than I was a year ago today. Do you realize we were talking about this before, that the fire was basically blazing down on us a year ago?
I know. A lot has happened in the past year.
Yes, and things are getting better, though.
Yes, they are.
Yes, they are. So speaking of things getting better,
we are excited to have in studio with us Zach Wasserman and Nicole Hetzel of Frequency Wines. And Zach is both the founder and winemaker. Thanks so much for being here with us today.
You're welcome. We're excited to be here.
So the first article we have today is a first for us. I actually got this article from the Wall Street Journal's editorial page. Now, I make it a habit not to read the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal because I love the Wall Street Journal, but I am a liberal, and therefore I end my reading at the editorial page.
Good for everybody to know.
Good for everybody to know, just full disclosure. But this article caught my eye, and it's called Investing for Good Meets the Law. And what it is about, two lawyers, one from Northwestern and the other from Harvard, wrote an article that said that people who invest in environmental, social, and government and governance, otherwise known as ESG.
Which is a very typical way to invest if you're looking for socially responsible investing.
And people who are fiduciaries, sometimes for universities, feel that the kids don't want to own an oil stock, so they'll exclude oil as a possible investment for their endowment. But what these
and it holds true not only for universities, but also for nonprofits, for a trustee or a fiduciary, for an individual person who's no longer able to manage their own finances. It all holds true for that.
And these lawyers say that's not the case. That is, a trustee, they say, must abide by their fiduciary duties by acting and, quote, the exclusive benefit, considering solely their interests without regard for collateral benefits such as advancing or environmental causes. So what they're saying is that if you're a fiduciary, like a board member of a not-for-profit, and you make the decision that you don't want to invest in cigarettes, in oil, in military, whatever it is that you find to be socially reprehensible, you are breaking the fiduciary rule if, in fact, it turns out that those were good investments. And so they're essentially raising the red flag to what otherwise would have been a generally accepted behavior that we all, that I thought until this morning, was perfectly fine.
Well, and what I think is interesting, though, is where the distinction is drawn is if you are a charity whose mission is, let's say, a Catholic charity, and you choose to not invest, or you choose to invest in line with the Catholic compass, whatever they may be, or some other religious institution. In that case, it probably does behoove you because it's an edict from up top, a mission-driven edict.
Right.
But if you're talking about something more general or broad, such as a university or a nonprofit that helps, let's say, homelessness, that's where you get into trouble by excluding whole sectors of the investment community based upon socially responsible investing.
You know, I wonder if this view that these two professors have stands up to testing, because if in fact they're right, there's a lot of people doing something that could get them into trouble. It's an interesting article, and I think it's worth looking out to see if there's an answer.
Especially in this community where we have so many nonprofits and so many different endowment committees that are operating for the betterment of our community, it's a very important piece.
And speaking of communities, it's a good segue into our next article, which is entitled When Neighbors Move Into Your Investment Portfolio. And this was from the Wall Street Journal as well. And it is a report about a study that someone did that analyzed neighborhood investing. And what they found after looking at 458,000 clients and 22,000 investment advisors state by state, they found out where you live makes a difference in how your investment portfolio is put together and how bullish or bearish you are. And they found that if you are in an area within 50 miles and people in that area buying stocks, you are more likely to be buying. And if you're in an area where 50-mile radius where people are bearish on stocks, you're more likely to be selling stocks. And Graham and Dodd, the two writers from 1938 who Warren Buffett found to be the most important influences on his investment philosophy, and I think, Warren Buffett actually walked the walk, not just talked the talk, moved to Omaha, Nebraska, so he wouldn't be in a neighborhood where anyone talked about anything that had to do with investing. And they basically found, Graham and Dodd, that you should just basically keep to yourself and not be influenced, because neighbors do influence you.
Yeah, I think in this article, my favorite line in it is, your tolerance for losses depends on where you live and with whom you socialize. And so, it ends in a great way where it says, with markets gyrating, unruffled serenity may become important again. If volatility scares you, spend more time with your family and friends who don't obsess over stocks. You'll be happier now and probably richer later on.
And that's why I've taken up yoga.
I can't even keep a straight face. Are you kidding me? You have. That's right. You have taken up yoga.
I have taken up yoga because I think serenity is the solution to investing.
And I feel like you've made progress on the yoga front because you're calling it yoga instead of yogur.
No, in New York, it's called yoga.
I know. That's the reason why you've made progress.
Yeah. But the reason I'm such a good investor is I don't have any friends here. That's helpful.
This isn't Neil's pity party. You have a more active social life than most people. You're always having people over for dinner.
Yeah, but anyway, I'm not going to get into that. But my wife's a good cook. That's why we have people over for dinner. Fire bond buyers face losses. Now, there are a lot of people out there that probably don't know what a fire bond is, and that's really good that they don't know. But believe it or not, there's a thing called a fire bond, which is issued sort of like an insurance policy. And people buy this stuff in order to get a higher than usual yield. And the way it works is you buy a bond, you get a yield, let's say that's 4% or 5%. The catch is that the bond is basically an insurance policy against some catastrophic loss like a fire or like a hurricane. And the reason that people are able to at least consider this a prudent investment is that there's a very, very, very high deductible or retention. So in order for you to actually have some losses, the insured party, like a utility company, for example, needs to lose a lot of money. Well, it turns out that PG&E, right before the fire this year, issued $200 million in a fire bond, and it looks like that whole bond is going to be wiped out because it insured the campfire in Northern California fire that burnt 19,000 structures and killed at least 85 people. So the idea of getting a little bit extra yield in order to have a risk that people thought was de minimis, turns out to be a real loss. So here you're going to lose everything. And, PG&E just said they're going to issue some more of this stuff because it helps them.
Right. And I think what the real issue or the crux of the problem of the fire bonds or the like, the hurricane bonds, the burrito bonds, whatever kind of bond that we're talking about, is the ultimate buyer or consumer of these products, they're trying to eke out that little bit of yield, extra yield. And I don't think they fully understand what they're buying when they buy it, because especially in California, PG&E, where, you know, we've been in a huge drought. The Woolsey fire happened, the Thomas fire. All of these have been the biggest fire until the next one starts. You know, it begs the question of, do the investors truly understand that their entire investment could be zero if something happens? And I think, unfortunately, we all realize that California, something can happen.
Well, you mentioned burrito bonds, and I know every time you mention it,
it's so egregious, I can't help but to mention it.
But I can't not repeat what it is. A burrito bond is a company that makes burritos that issued stock. As part of the stock offering, you got to get free burritos.
No, it's part of the bond offering.
The bond offering, you got free burritos. And, I mean, you can't make this stuff up. It's like a Saturday Night Live skit that, you know, you can buy this bond. It may not be good, but you get a free burrito with every stock certificate. And the last article, which is actually a serious one, is something we've talked about before, but it's, at this time of year, it's really worth repeating, that if you own a mutual fund, the mutual fund is an entity unto itself, and if the mutual fund takes capital gains during the year, and capital gains could be a result of investments they made 20, 30 years ago that has nothing to do with the performance that you were benefited by if you bought the mutual fund 4 or 5 months ago. That capital gains is taxed to those mutual fund owners that were mutual fund owners as of record of some day, December 21st, December 22nd, some day that they are as of record. So you could end up buying a mutual fund in February. It goes down 5% during the year, and you can end up with a 20% capital gain because the fund actually realized gains because, and in this case, what's happening this year is two things. One is there's been such a rush to the exits for people to go out of certain funds into index funds. And in order to raise money to pay these investors back, the mutual funds have to sell. And what they're selling is unfortunately some of the stocks that they bought years and years ago that have huge capital gains. So in a sense, not in a sense, in reality, you as a new investor would be paying the gains of someone that sold the mutual fund 15 years ago, but the mutual fund hadn't sold the stocks that made the fund go up. So you've got to be very careful when you buy a mutual fund, what date you're buying on it, when it goes ex-dividend.
And given what's happening in the market right now, where the volatility is quite high and we've now entered into negative territory on the S&P 500, this is going to be a rude awakening for many investors if they don't start looking and doing some tax preparation now, reviewing how much capital gains they have, seeing if they either does it make sense to not own that mutual fund on the ex-dividend date, what to do and how to do it. And that's really where professional advice could behoove you, both from your CPA and your financial advisor.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that we can give our daughters everything they need to grow and learn, but not every child can focus on classes and play dates.
Nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. face hunger. That's 1 in 6. School lunch might be their only meal each day, and it's heartbreaking to imagine any child going to bed hungry. We're dreaming of a perfect day when kids can smile, play, and just be kids without worrying about where their next meal will come from.
Feeding America is working to make that perfect day a reality.
Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste. That food is given to families and children in need. Being a kid should be about doing things that make an ordinary day extraordinary. Learning to play an instrument, building a sandcastle, hosting tea parties. Hunger should never be an obstacle to growing up.
You can help end childhood hunger in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending. Since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner. And we can be reached at 805-564-1290.
And we are excited to welcome to the show both Zach Wasserman and Nicole Hertzel of Frequency Wines. And I think a highlight is in 2012, they earned a 93-point rating on their Frequency Syrah, which they brought you a bottle, Neil. You get to enjoy something. He's usually always complaining that the guests never bring him anything.
Well, you know, I think we should open the bottle now. So I think in the show we get much more enjoyable.
Much more, yeah, exactly, for everyone, right? So welcome, guys. So let's talk a little bit about, Zach, what you were a molecular biologist, or that's what your degree was in, at the University of California in Berkeley. What made you become a winemaker?
The fast answer that I like to give people, because it's magical, is destiny. The reality is my sister. Molecular biology was this idea of, I'm going to go to school, I'm going to study genetics, and I'm going to help people live longer. You know, I was really interested in oncology, so cancer. Mm-hmm. And the first and only job I had before being a winemaker was working with molecular kind of manipulation, so on a genetic level, and modifying genes for actually British Petroleum on algae, and we were making biofuel. And so that was the first path of me getting to med school. But within the 3 months of me working and doing this genetic modification research, I wasn't inspired. I wasn't intrigued by my peers who were around me in this laboratory. And I just felt like I did all this hard work to get this degree, and I wasn't, you know, satiated with my day to day. My sister, who is older than I am and who has been in the San Ynez Valley after her degree, just felt that everything I was doing in terms of studying and my personality and kind of my social skills and creativity just fit to be a winemaker. She was already working in the industry for a brand called Andrew Murray and with Joey Tensley, who I later and still today became, you know, great friends and kind of the student of. I work with Joey Tensley. So it all just kind of folded out in that manner. I didn't want to go to med school. I wanted to come back to San Ynez where I grew up and save money, find a job to make money. And the only thing in the valley that allowed me to utilize a little bit of my degree and intrigued me was making wine.
And you know the old saying, the way to make $1 million in the wine business is to start off with $10 million. So
that's an old saying.
It's an old saying. It's a very profitable business, and that everyone should go into it because that's where the money is, right? You can't fail.
Yeah, I know. So, definitely cannot fail.
So it's a tough business.
Yeah. There's a lot of people in the game who have much more money than we do, for sure. And there's a lot of people in the game who don't even worry about making money. In fact, it's just a sink in terms of putting money in to maybe show a little bit less profit on their end books. But what's lucky for us is there's not many people playing who have the passion, the drive, and really the creativity to be out there and doing it the way we are. So though we may not have the funds to pump up the brand that others can, I'm not really too worried about that because we have the raw creativity to make it stand out amongst the crowd.
So tell us a little bit about your wines. What makes them stand out among the crowd?
Yeah, I mean, so Frequency is all Rhone varietals. So varietals originating from the southern part of France. In terms of hierarchy of varietals, it's basically Burgundy, Bordeaux, and then Rhone. And it's true, obviously, in France, and those are the most expensive and the most prestigious, and it translates over in the New World. So in terms of making wine in Santa Barbara County, Pinot Noir and Chardonnay is the most expensive for me to purchase and turn into fruit, meaning I don't own vineyards, I'm purchasing contracted fruit. And then when I turn that around to sell it back to you, it's gonna be more expensive. So when I first got into making wine, Number one, Roan varietals were more accessible. So everything's Roan varietals in frequency. And two, my mentor in the whole industry is Joey Tensley. And he, is within the top three or so producers of Santa Barbara County of Syrah. I would, go on a limb and say the number one producer of Syrah in Santa Barbara County, but we have many friends producing Syrah that do great as well. So my real initiation to the wine industry was making Syrah and Roan varietals, so it made the most sense to follow that kind of lead. In terms of standing out in a crowd with the wines, it's an international game. So as you said, it's lots of competition, and you can look right here in Santa Barbara and find 150 labels that are unique brands that are competing against frequency. But that scope will kill you and make your brand, not very unique and for sure not very exciting. So the scope is international, and I think that's what allows us to stand out, because we're not going home and trying brands from around here. We're trying brands from around the world. We're traveling around the world to see brands. And a lot of that is due to the influence of Joey Tensley. He knows that that's what keeps us, moving forward, is being inspired by people outside of California, outside of Santa Barbara County.
When you say inspired by, does that mean that when you taste a wine, you say, wow, that's really great.
Mm-hmm.
How can I recreate this? As a most of us novice drinkers that we are, we taste it and it's interesting for me is I either like it or I don't, right? And it doesn't matter where the price point is. There are some price points that are super high that I'm like, oh, I don't like that at all, and some that are low that I really enjoy. And so when you're tasting around the world, do you hints of things and then you try to recreate, or how does that work? Explain to us the inspiration. And first, I know Nicole is your inspiration. You say it on your website.
Yes, of course. Yes. The inspiration, this is a never-ending answer, I feel, because for me personally, wine is always inspiring on multiple levels. I think number one and the most important thing is going back to this competitive aspect of it. There are a million different bottles of wine you can buy, I'm assuming, if not more. And so number one is creating something that's a unique expression. And that comes to being inspired by a bottle of wine. To me, is your ability to open the bottle of wine and from the first aromatic, the first flavor profile, it is something unique and something that tells a story that you've never experienced before. And it's part of the reason why we enjoy drinking wines from around the world, because something that's grown in Spain, something that's grown in Germany is going to offer such a different flavor profile, a different smell, even a different texture than something that's grown here, just due to the environment. So for me, I'm never trying to emulate or replicate a flavor. There's nothing that I or we create as winemakers. It's all what's grown out in the vineyard. So more importantly, it's creating a pure expression of what Santa Barbara County has to offer. You can travel the world to experience a place, or you can buy a bottle of wine to experience a place. Obviously, they're very different experiences. But for me, I'm very proud to be born in Santa Barbara County. I'm very proud to be born in San Ynez. I have no intention of ever making a wine that's outside of Santa Barbara County for frequency. And for me, the biggest thing is when someone consumes a bottle of frequency, number one, and most importantly, it's easy to drink and enjoyable. Before any nuance, before any complexity, is can you drink it? Two, does it feel good to drink? And then three, what's the story being told? Is it fun? Is it fruity? Is it flamboyant? Is it serious and spicy and tannic? And these are a range of flavors and or characteristics that Santa Barbara can encompass. And so from there, it's kind of like when you're trying different things around the world, you can be inspired in that direction, but never emulate it in the sense of I'm going to find that flavor profile. But you can stylize something to have that same energy or attitude or kind of, approach.
This is radio, so you don't see the guests, but before the show, you were, into doing your social media and looking at it. And while you discussed that, your whole face lit up. I mean, this is obviously something that is meaningfully passionate for you, which is, I think, what
what comes through in the wines. Absolutely.
You're listening to Money Talk on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Jeff Devine from American Riviera Bank. All of our customers were once just like you, stuck with a bank that kept charging more for less. But when they finally made the decision to change banks, American Riviera Bank made the move easy with mobile deposit, online banking, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks dream of. Come in and make the move today in our downtown Santa Barbara or Montecito Upper Village branches. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people.
Star Jasmine Music serves over 3,600 people per year. By providing a safe, supportive environment to explore music, you'll find a place that resonates within. We teach songwriting and how to play a variety of instruments. We have a Pro Tools state-of-the-art recording facility and provide opportunities for teens and young adults who show passion for music and demonstrate talent to record their work. This experience has been known to better one's self-esteem and often leads to development of skills in business and self-management. We have special programs for at-risk youth, as well as the mentally and physically challenged. When ready after a 10-week series, we record our students and give them a CD to show the fruit of their efforts. This experience leads to self-confidence. Visit us at www.starjasminemusic.org. Star Jasmine Music. Sharing music exploration through teaching and recording.
Remember, one less spark is one less wildfire. Have fun without fire. In many areas, use of campfires and charcoal cookers are not allowed. Make that an advantage. Stargazing is better without firelight. Or listen to the forest at night when creatures really prowl. Hike in the moonlight with a flashlight. Bundle up and enjoy the warmth while sensing the chill that wild things feel. Make camping different this weekend and camp without a spark. The California Statewide Fire Prevention Campaign thanks you for your cooperation.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence. Do you think that drinking wine interferes with my ability to pronounce?
It sounded like on that lead-in. If you're just joining us, we have the founder and winemaker of Frequency Wine in the studio with us, Zach Wasserman, and Nicole Herzl, who is a marketing genius in the wine space. So,
Thank you, Nicole.
Tell us a little bit about how you found Frequency and how you help them.
Well, Zach is phenomenal making wine, and he spends all of his time making wine. So I've known Zach since third grade, I believe.
Oh, how cute.
Yeah.
Really? I didn't know that.
We reconvened through the wine industry. I was working for a different brand and kind of just hit it off again from there. And I sell the wine. So that's kind of a big part of it is being energetic and profiling somebody to match them up with their perfect wine or for the perfect gift. And the background of it, you know, Instagram, big player in selling wine, surprisingly.
So Instagram is one of the ways that you're able to draw clients in for tastings?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, just having a presence here in Santa Barbara and letting people know that we're open. We're right next door to a fabulous cheese shop, Say Cheese. And yeah, it's been driving quite a lot of business, surprisingly.
And so how, on a business front, how do you accumulate members? Because I've got to imagine that getting wine memberships is really kind of gives you like a bottom line or that foundation of how much revenue you're going to have as a company in order to produce the next wine or know how many grapes to buy next time.
Yeah, absolutely.
All the financial projections.
Well, when they come and they have the experience and they want to have it again, it just makes the most sense financially. You can come in, enjoy complimentary tastings, and we send you in. Three times a year, we send you a couple bottles of wine. People usually sign up right away.
Yes, as someone that wine tastes, if I go to your winery, I normally, and depending on where you fall in the lineup of wineries that I'm tasting that day.
Absolutely.
My husband always says, Diane, one, that's all you get this time.
Absolutely.
What's the price point of your wines?
Our lowest price point right now is $25, and it goes up to $38. But we will be releasing some reserve wines next year, I believe. That are going to be a little bit higher.
And distribution is through the supermarkets as well? Are you in the supermarkets?
We're a very small brand. We do about 1,000 cases right now a year. We do have some distribution in Texas and in New York and Denmark.
Are they primarily through restaurants or are they through...
Wine shops and restaurants. Wine shops. Yeah. Very select, of course.
When I came from New York, I was absolutely shocked that when I went to Vons the first time, there was a sommelier in Vons. You know, you go into a supermarket and there's somebody there asking what type of wine do you like. This is an amazing state in that sense.
Yeah. It's amazing how much is out there and to find the perfect wine for you without tasting it. It's probably a great idea to have. Mm-hmm.
And so, Zach, what would you say is, you know, the question of nurture versus nature? Is it the grape or is it the secret sauce that you put into the wine that really makes a great bottle? Or a combination of both. I've got to imagine the best wines are a combination of both. But what do you think is most important?
It's nurture of the nature. So the most important thing is where the site is, your vineyard.
Meaning if they get cool breezes off the ocean if it gets really hot and during the day.
Your environmental influences is the most important. But within that, there is a farming approach that changes the intensity, the concentration. You can grow for yields, the amount of weight on your vine, or you can grow for quality. So number one is a place of where it is from, a sense of a place. And then number two is how do you farm it? Once it gets into the winery, we can't add anything. Well, sure we can, but it's going to be artificial. And it's not going to give you, as I said before, this unique experience that comes from one spot since we're trying to create unique products. The second it comes in and you start adding things, those same things can be added by anybody else, most likely, unless you are creating some magic elixir. But of course, you can buy great fruit and turn it into not great wine. So yes, there's a lot of nurture involved, but every great winemaker is going to say it's nature over nurture.
How do you deal with education? It must be frustrating because I know from my history, and I would imagine based on the comment Diane made before, a lot of, if not the majority of wine drinkers really can't tell a difference. So is there... any frustration on the fact that you're at the serving wine and you know the people just don't get it? They like it, but they don't really appreciate it. And if so, is there a way to increase education of so that people can really get the best of it?
I'm going to agree with you in the beginning and say education's huge because most people are very influenced by someone who may or may not have more knowledge of the subject. But intuitively, and something that really drives my passion for making wine, is if it's good, people know it's good, whether or not you tell them. And it's not just a flavor thing. It's the way it feels in your mouth. It's the way it feels when you swallow it. It's the way it hits your stomach. There's just certain products and certain wine that is made in a way that is fun and feels good to consume. And I'm not just talking about the buzz you get, but literally just easy to consume and easy to take in. So from my point of view, I'm creating something, I'm bottling it, and then I'm handing it off to Nicole to sell or whoever may be in our tasting room or a wine rep that may be walking the streets in Los Angeles. And at that point, I just have to have complete confidence, and I do, that someone's going to try the wine and they're going to enjoy it. Educationally, there's a whole bunch of different people who are influencing sommeliers or influencing wine buyers. And I personally don't have the time to be an influencer. I'm just a creator. So that may evolve as I gain free time and more systems are put into place. But in the end, no, I have no frustration in that. If someone comes in and they don't understand that wine and they're going to walk out, luckily I make a small enough amount that we can sell it to somebody else. But at this point, you like it or you don't, and you can make that decision. It's not going to ever frustrate me.
So, Zach, your Frequency Wine is really a family business.
Correct.
How are those dynamics? Your mom's involved. Your sister's involved. It sounds like your sister pushed you into this career in the first place, and it worked, fortunately. But given that I have three pushy sisters myself, how do you make that work on a day-to-day?
I think a lot of it is space, giving each other space and giving each other proper responsibility and then not overstepping those bounds. My biggest reason and my initial reason of moving back here and then getting into the wine industry when my sister offered it was I saw the global scale of it. I saw the basically this myriad of ideas that you can be a farmer, a creator as an artist in winemaking. You can be a businessman because we design the marketing approach. And then there's this personal service entity to it where we're interacting with the public and offering them a good time and a nice product. So with all those different facets to the industry, we can have different individuals in our family kind of servicing and taking care of those responsibilities. And with that, my most important part of existence is taking care of and being with my family. So of course, just like any dynamic, there's going to be ups and downs, but the most powerful thing to me, and I think to Nicole and my family, is you're always going to have problems with your employees and your quote unquote colleagues, but is something that you'll never have is this just unconditional love of your family. So we never really have that many issues. I mean,
yeah, but there's Thanksgiving.
There is Thanksgiving. Luckily, it's the one day we get to be together because we close our tasting room.
Right.
Even if mom doesn't want to come over, we still force her to come over.
You force her to come.
Yeah.
Well, that's good because that's not everybody's experience in a family business, and I think that's important. So, let's talk a little bit about your labels, because you have an artist series with a beautifully crafted rose with drops of water as a label. Tell us how that came about and what are you sharing with us through that label and the bottle of wine?
You know, this is such a good question that we're going to have to just take a breath and wait for 2 minutes for the answer.
All right, sounds good.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
When I grow up, I want to be a glass countertop in a new home.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's best birthday present.
When I grow up, I want to be a football stadium.
When I grow up, I want to be a warm fleece on a cold day.
When I grow up, I want to be a fancy backsplash.
I want to be a bike that races around the
country. When I grow up, I want to be a bench on a forest
trail. When I
grow
up, I want to be a rocking chair on
when
a sunny
I grow up,
porch.
I want to be a skyscraper.
I want to be a...
I want to be a...
I want to be...
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 I
want to
be...
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. A public service advertisement brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by American Riviera Bank, making your life easier with cutting-edge technology, mobile deposits, free use of every ATM machine in the country, and a level of service other banks could only dream about.
So, Zach, when we were before the break, we were talking about, you know, the artist series and what inspired that and what loveliness comes inside this bottle. How did it come about?
Yeah, I understand. So to kind of preface the story of the artist series, no one can see these labels, and if they know the brand, they've seen them. But the name Frequency is kind of this ubiquitous description of how the whole universe works in terms of a Western thought. You know, everything's vibrating. Everything has literally a frequency or a wave that can be describing its density or lack of density, whether it's a table or the light or the wall, everything is vibrating at a certain level. Whether or not we can discern it, that's just because of our limited perception. With that, there was no image that would ever describe frequency that I would be happy with. So our labels are very, very modern and clean and minimalistic.
That's a good way to describe them.
Going from there, not every bottle on the table do we want to be that minimalistic. So what we started doing is kind of stealing and or emulating an idea that has been around the wine industry for a long time, which was to basically find an artist we enjoy, ask them to buy an original painting, and then take that painting and put it on the bottle as the label art. So the most famous brand is probably Mouton. Mouton Rothschild from Bordeaux has done this for a century, I believe. Definitely decades. I think a century. The brand's old enough to be around for doing that. But they were, you know, commissioning Pablo Picasso, Salvador Dali, even Andy Warhol did one. And I mean, that's like the top level of this. So if you look around the wine industry around the world, many people are doing artist series to bring in art and wine. This is a great project for us because what we do is we find individuals on Instagram. So it's a great tool, Instagram, to find other humans and connect. We find artists that we enjoy their Instagram profile that show all their art pieces that are kind of within our peer range, so within 10 years of how old we are, and always original artists that are doing some sort of physical art. So rather than it being a graphic designer, which is who designs our labels, they're either photographers or painters. So this label you have in front of us is our 2016 artist series. It's a blend of Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèd from one vineyard in Los Alamos. And the artist's name is Brian Wilmot. So he's a painter in Brooklyn. He has a warehouse in Brooklyn. And we bought the original piece in 2016 and then bottled the wine in 17, so we had time to prepare these labels, and the original art is in our tasting room. So as we do these labels, we keep gaining new contemporary artist pieces, which is cool for us because we have all this original art, and then it allows our bottles to always have a spark each vintage.
And free advice is worth what you pay for it, but then you can take the art, put it in your tasting room, and sell it.
Of course, or just keep it because I like it.
Right.
So now when you see an artist for one of these series, is it something that needs to speak to you, or does it have to be, or is it something that actually is emblematic of the wine inside the bottle?
For this scenario, it's both. I think it's always somewhat of a depiction of what's inside the bottle. I mean, this is a very floral wine, so having a big macro image of an art with these beautiful little crystalline water drops is perfect. Not to mention the color is literally the color of the wine inside, that magenta, burgundy, purple kind of spread. But more than anything, it's, does the art speak to me, whether or not it connects to the bottle? And then two, do I have a relationship that I enjoy? And do I want to support? Do we want to say this person's name every day in the tasting room? I mean, sometimes we offer these people, a certain amount of funds for their work, and they want way more. And I'm like, well, work with me here. I'm going to print all these labels that are going to cost me money, and we're going to support you for the next vintage, which is a whole year of hyping these artists up. And if the person doesn't mesh with my vibe and we aren't getting along, then it's like, well, we're not gonna put the effort in anyways. Most of these artists are so grateful, and they wanna play along, and they're so happy to see.
Well, the exposure alone is huge for them.
So is Santa Barbara wine business, is it clubby? Is it tough to get into socially, if that's important? Are you considered a newcomer and you're not part of the group, or is it everyone is open and friendly? What's the dynamic socially?
I think...
Keep in mind it's recorded.
Yeah. I got that. That's why I'm not saying any bad words. Yet. I think up front, face to face, it's pretty friendly. I think in any industry, in any small town, there's silly drama and hearsay and all of that. But in general, wine makers and people in the wine industry are doing something that, one, has been around pretty much for the written history of humans, and two, it's a very grounded industry. There are, CEOs and big corporations that I don't ever interact with. But here in Santa Barbara, everyone's a farmer, everyone's working in the service industry, everyone's hands-on with what they're doing. We're moving a physical product. It isn't some made-up product that you aren't consuming. You know, it's so integral to just human culture that in general, it's a great relationship industry. In terms of me being a newcomer and our brand being new, yes, we're babies. But that doesn't mean we're not accepted, and it doesn't mean we're not respected. I think that those people who have been around for a long time think more than anything, oh, it's just another brand to get in the way of our sales. And, oh, they're young and excited, and they're going to be pushing their sales, so they are someone to respect. With that comes clickiness. And you said, you know, there's definitely little clicks within the industry. There's certain styles. I mean, if you look Santa Rita Hills, everyone's making Burgundy varietals, Pinot Noir, and Chardonnay. You look to the east of the San Andreas Valley, there's more Bordeaux varietals, Cabernet Sauvignon, and then kind of in the middle is just this like hodgepodge of whatever you want to do. So there's a little bit of click there, but in general, I think it's, I mean, pretty accepting, and everyone's rooting for each other.
What would you say was the biggest difficulty when starting up Frequency Wines that you've had to face?
It's just so capital intensive. So the ability to grow the brand is really based on your ability to create inventory. And inventory obviously costs money. You're buying fruit, you're buying packaging, meaning you have to buy the grapes, you have to turn the grapes into wine, and then from there you got to put the wine into bottles, which is glass, the cork, all the labels, and then where do you store it? So now you have to pay rent on these warehousing. So it's capital intensive, and it's really hard for someone who's coming into it without that capital behind it. So, you know, for us, the only way that I and we have gotten this far with Frequency is my relationship with Joey Tensley and being the assistant winemaker at Tensley. He started with nothing and created a brand that is quite successful. And with that, he has the compassion and the awareness to be able to offer me space in his winery to create my brand at an overhead that's much, much more manageable than, say, if I had to find all this equipment and all this warehouse space by myself. So we have a very great relationship and a very unique relationship. And not that I know of, I'm the only 30-year-old winemaker, and it's with this established brand with a tasting room downtown, and it's completely due to me working for a boss that is really kind and offering me a lot to move myself forward as I help him.
Well, and he must really believe in you, which that in and of itself is, you know, huge.
Yeah, definitely. We have a lot of common passions, from obviously making wine, the style of wines we enjoy, to watching soccer, you know, to all kinds of food and, you know, creative things. So for us, we're growing together. He's learning from me, just from me asking questions. And I'm obviously always learning from him because he never lets me sit idle, you know, whether it's the style of wine we're making for him, the way we're farming for him. If he needs to be inspired and we just need to go to France for a week and learn some more stuff about wine and meet new winemakers that we really enjoy. And that relationship is, one, built up my inspiration, and two, you know, allowed Frequency to grow underneath Tensley.
You've been listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Hi, I'm Jeff Devine from American Riviera Bank. All of our customers were once just like you, stuck with a bank that kept charging more for less. But when they finally made the decision to change banks, American Riviera Bank made the move easy with mobile deposit, online banking, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks dream of. Come in and make the move today in our downtown Santa Barbara or Montecito Upper Village branches. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite
invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
If you believe food is more than just fuel for the body, and a meal without wine is like a day without sunshine, listen to Cork and Fork Radio with John Hennigan. No wine speak or restaurant reviews, just a tasty conversation. Cork and Fork, Fridays at noon and 10 p.m. and Sundays at 5 p.m. on AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press radio station.
Brought to you by Mesa Produce, Il Fustino, and Palace Cafe.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
So, Zach, what is your vision going forward? So you're a young brand. You are still working for the Tensley brand and working with your mentor, which I think is uber important, you know, to help you with your brand. What do you see as the vision going forward for Frequency? What do you envision in 10, 15 years that the brand looks like?
Yeah, it's
kind of a fun exercise.
It's a fun exercise, and it's an exercise I try to stay away from. mainly because you look too far ahead and you're not focused on the most important thing, which is right in front of you. And that's never how I've functioned in Frequency. It's always been, you know, do the task that's in front of you, grow when growth is available. We've never been a brand to grow without there being a channel to put the wine. So it's always been demand before growth. The demand is always what kind of initiates our growth. And that way we aren't too capital heavy in our, you know, inventory, and we're not stressing on what are we going to do with all this wine. But the really unique thing about Frequency is what I was describing before. We're in a winery setting in which I'm getting to make wine very small scale underneath another brand's infrastructure, which is great, because what it's going to always allow us to do is make small lots of really unique wines that are really high quality. We don't need to scale up just to have cash flow to float the whole picture, because we're embedded underneath something that's a little bit, you know, more stable, well, definitely more stable than us, but also just moving a bigger scale of a brand. So the future is, for the next year and a half that I'm looking at, is just continue to make small lots of really high quality stuff that either Santa Barbara, Southern California, and or people who do find us from across the nation can come and enjoy, and always have, you know, a solid wine that'll be in their cellar at a very affordable price. And that's really all that matters to us, is unique wines that express Santa Barbara County and are fun to drink compared to the rest of the world.
So if someone's listening right now and they're thinking, Frequency Wine, I don't even know where that is, I want to go taste it. When is the tasting room open? What is your address that you're located at?
Yeah, we're open every day, noon to 6, to generalize a little
bit.
So
Monday through Sunday, every day?
Every day, wow. Yeah. Noon to 6. And we're located 831 Santa Barbara Street. So that is right next to Say Cheese Cafe.
Excellent. And so noon to 6.
Yep.
All right.
And if you're feeling like trying wine early, we're open 11 on Saturdays and Sundays.
And you have a website.
Of course we have a website.
Which is?
Frequencywines.com.
Well, thank you so much, Zach and Nicole, for being here.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
And maybe, Diane, you and I should go to the wine tasting room now.
Perfect.
It's a good way to end the day.
I'm game. I'm off my no drinking as of the 21st.
So you've been listening to Money Talk. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.